Hello, innovators, disruptors, and future makers. Welcome back to the Sales Accelerator podcast, where we dive deep into the pulse of AI-driven sales innovation. I'm your host, Tim Kortinovis, and this is my synthesized voice. We use it to bring you the latest news on AI in sales and business in the fastest way possible. Today is a very special episode as we present you a warm conversation around my latest book, Agentic Sales: Stop Chasing Cold Leads and Let AI Agents Generate, Qualify, and Convert Your B2B Sales Pipeline 24/7. It is all about AI and the future of sales. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Deep Dive. This is where we take a stack of sources and really dig in to find the most important nuggets of knowledge for you. Today, we're plunging into something pretty fascinating, I think. It's a look at the future of sales, and we're drawing insights straight from Tim Kortinovis' book, Agentic Sales. So our mission today really is to unpack what agentic sales actually means, why it's maybe more than just a trend, maybe a structural shift that's happening right now, and you know how it's fundamentally changing how businesses grow, how they connect with customers. We want to arm you with some practical insights you can start thinking about for your own work. Okay, so to kick us off, let's dive into the story from the book. It's quite powerful. Imagine Naomi. She's the founder, six-person cybersecurity startup. Burning the Midnight Oil, Austin co-working loft, you know the scene, her competitors, enjoying the weekend. But she has this autonomous sales agent. She calls it Ada. And Ada is busy, not just sending emails, but like designing personalized ones, testing subject lines, booking demos, all on its own. Naomi logs off at midnight. Ada keeps working.
36 hours later, Naomi wakes up. 15 new qualified meetings pop up on her calendar. And these aren't just any meetings. Most are with Fortune 1000 prospects, the kind who'd ignored her human outreach for months. No fancy trade show, no expensive dinner, no big SDR team. Just, you know, a scrappy founder, the right message, and this. Tireless digital colleague. Okay, let's unpack that, because stories like Naomi's, they're not sci-fi anymore, are they? They feel like early signal. A big shift. This is the age of agentic sales. So what does that actually mean? What is agentic sales?
Yeah, it's a great question, and Naomi's story really sets the stage. In plain language, agentic sales is basically the discipline of delegating tasks, but not just any tasks, repeatable, cognitively demanding sales tasks. You delegate them to autonomous software agents, agents that can perceive, decide, and act continuously on behalf of the business. It's that continuously and decide part that's the real game changer here.
That does sound like a huge leap from what most of us think of as automation, right? Like automation is often just if this, then that, simple rules.
Exactly.
But what you're describing, this true agency, it feels totally different. You use the analogy in the book, the difference between a vending machine spitting out a soda and a self-driving car that's reading signs, anticipating traffic, adapting.
Right. That's a great way to think about it.
But I mean, doesn't that introduce a whole new layer of risk?
Yeah.
Or governance challenges? It's not just if this, then that anymore.
You're absolutely right. It does. It requires a different kind of oversight, for sure. More careful management. But what's really fascinating and why this is happening now is that five key forces have kind of converged. They make agentic sales practical today. First, foundation models came of age. These huge language models, they've digested like the entire public web. So they understand nuance, intent, context way better than any rigid rule-based system ever could. They actually get it.
Okay, so they understand better. What else?
Second, affordable compute at the edge. Basically, powerful chips are everywhere now in laptops, and we have these super fast connections, low latency APIs. It means the agents can think and react almost instantly, faster than a human can type, sometimes faster than we can even process. Real-time adaptation becomes possible.
No, right, the speed element.
Third, ubiquitous data exhaust. Think about all the data sloshing around. CRMs, marketing platforms, social media, product usage data. It's all raw material for these agents to personalize outreach at a massive scale. Humans just can't process that much data effectively.
Uh-huh. Data fuel.
Fourth, modular tooling and open source frameworks. This is key. You don't need a PhD in AI anymore to piece these technologies together. People can build this stuff.
Accessibility. Makes sense.
And finally, fifth, cultural readiness. Buyers, well, we all live in our inboxes and chat windows now, don't we? People are actually quite happy to schedule demos with bots if the bots are efficient, respect their time, and offer real value.
Okay, so you put all that together. Better understanding, incredible speed, tons of data. easier tools, and buyers who are okay with it. It really does shatter that old idea, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That you need more headcount to get more pipeline.
Completely.
A well-set-up agent isn't just firing off emails. It's researching, drafting personalized messages, testing them, following up intelligently, logging everything 24/7. You mentioned a human SDR might manage, what, 15 meaningful touches a day?
Maybe, if they're really good.
An agent could do thousands. Personalize in the same time. The scale is just mind-boggling.
It is. And what's also really powerful here, I think, is how it levels the playing field. You know, big companies used to have this huge advantage. Armies of SDRs, big budgets for events.
Right, the resource gap.
Agentic sales redraws that map. When compute gets cheaper than payroll and the intelligence is baked into the code, suddenly the quality of your idea, your value proposition, matters way more than the size of your bank account. You see these scrappy startups launching global outreach from a coffee shop Wi-Fi, competing with giants.
That really does flip the script. But, okay, here's where it gets really interesting for me. Because the tech alone doesn't close deals, right? An agent just amplifies whatever you feed it.
Precisely.
So if you have weak value prop, sending it out faster with AI, that's just faster failure, maybe even more damage.
Exactly. Garbage in, garbage out at machine speed.
So before anyone gets excited and unleashes these powerful agents, what's the absolute non-negotiable groundwork? What has to be solid first?
Yeah, this is probably the most critical point in the whole book, I'd say. The foundation is everything. And that foundation is product market fit, PMF. There's this anecdote about Jay Kim. His startup spent nearly $5,000 on an AI service promising autonomous pipeline in days.
It sounds great on paper.
Looked great in the inbox, too. Within a week, 122 meetings booked. Glorious.
Amazing. Or maybe not.
Not so much. The calls were no-shows. Or they were junior people with no authority. Or prospects who liked the look of the product but said it lacked a crucial integration, a key API.
So the meetings weren't actually qualified.
Exactly. Jay realized he'd jumped the gun. He didn't actually know whose problem he was truly solving yet. Speed without clarity. It's just expensive waste. Like you said, a super fast car with no steering.
Right. That story hits home. Yeah. So how do you get that clarity? The book offers a framework, doesn't it? Starting with a value prop.
It does.
Craft a value proposition that survives a breath. Using that pain, claim, gain model. But getting really specific. What's the exact costly pain? What do you do to remove it better, faster, cheaper? And what's the measurable win? Like the example, we slash excess inventory by 20% in 90 days for mid-market manufacturers. Boom. Clear. Concise.
Exactly. Specificity is key.
And then you have to actually validate demand at human speed. Not with bots yet. With the three commit rule. Getting prospects to agree to a 30-minute call, it's a time commitment. Getting them to share data, like dashboards or process docs, data commitment.
Right. Skin in the game.
And finally, signing an LOI or even sending a small payment money commitment. Real signals.
Those commitments tell you if the pain is real enough for them to act. And then to really lock it in, you write the one-sentence PMF formula. This isn't just for marketing. It's an internal alignment tool.
Yeah.
For target customer WHO, as is pain, our product is a category that provides this key benefit. Unlike the alternative, we offer this differentiation.
Like the Fluxo example. For demand planning managers drowning in spreadsheets, Fluxo is a browser-based simulator forecasting SKU demand in minutes. Unlike legacy ERP, we require zero IT integration.
Exactly. And the test is, can everyone on your team say that sentence without looking at notes? If yes, you're getting much closer to true PMF.
That internal clarity is so crucial before you scale anything. Okay, PMF is nailed down. What's next?
Next up is define an ideal customer profile, ICP, laser focus. There's another great story about Gina Herrera, a CRO, marketing delivered over 4,000 qualified leads. Sounds good, right?
Sounds like they were busy.
Very busy, but net new ARR, flatlined.
Ouch.
The core problem. Nobody could answer the basic question. Which of these logos actually belongs to our best customer? They didn't know who they were really looking for.
So spraying and praying?
Pretty much. 3 weeks later, armed with a super sharp ICP, total meetings actually dropped, but closed won deals doubled.
Wow. That's the spear beats the net idea. Precision pays off.
Absolutely. An ICP dossier, the book suggests, should fit on one page. Five sections. Firmographics industry, size, etc. Triggers and signals, what events indicate they might need you now. Like a new exec hire or a funding round.
Timing indicators.
A persona map, KPIs, pain points, obstacles for each key person involved. The language of pain, how do they actually talk about their problems? Use their words.
Verbatim phrases. That's smart.
And just as important, an anti-ICP. Who do you actively ignore? Save so much time. The book even has this agentic readiness score. If you score below 4 on nailing your PMF and ICP, the advice is blunt. Keep the bots in the lab. Don't automate yet.
Okay, that's a really strong emphasis on getting foundations right first. PMF, ICP, no shortcuts. So assuming you've done that hard work, you know who you're selling to, you know the problem you solve. Now, how do you bring the agents in? How do you use them for smarter outreach, better lead management? What are the actionable strategies?
Right. Now we get to the fun part, where the tech meets the strategy. Let's talk personalization at scale. Remember Ravi Patel, director of enterprise sales. His team blasted 4,000 emails a week, got 21 meetings, not great efficiency.
Sounds exhausting, frankly.
Totally. His light bulb moment came from a handwritten birthday card from his dentist.
It is dentist, okay.
Yeah. It felt earned, he said. It made him realize true personalization isn't just dropping in the weather in Austin. It's proving you bothered to care, showing real relevance.
Ah, so it's about demonstrating you did your homework, not just mail merge.
Precisely. So they switched gears, used autonomous agents focused on deep personalization.
Mm-hmm.
6 weeks later, outbound volume dropped 73%.
73% drop.
But qualified meetings tripled. It wasn't about volume anymore. It was about relevance and quality.
That's incredible. How did they achieve that? The book mentions a 5-layer personalization stack.
Yeah, it's a useful model. Starts with a solid data bedrock, then insight extraction, turning raw facts into compelling hooks, then message assembly, crafting the actual email or message, followed by channel and cadence orchestration, when and where to send it. And finally, real-time adaptation, adjusting based on responses or lack thereof. It's a whole system.
It sounds like a much more sophisticated approach than just first name.
Way beyond that. And the ROI numbers the book shares are stark. Old model, 2,000 generic emails, maybe 4 meetings, cost $800. Agentic model, 400 highly personalized emails, potentially 18 meetings, cost $550. More meetings, less cost, way less noise.
It really drives home the point about precision.
Exactly. And that precision carries over into rapid lead qualification. Remember Layla Chen, the new VP of sales, greenlit 40 red hot demos from an AI tool.
Yeah, you mentioned that one. Sounded promising.
Only 3 got past the initial discovery call, and 1 high score prospect turned out to be an intern doing research for a thesis.
Oh dear. That's not ideal.
Her takeaway was sharp. Never again confuse activity with intent. Agents are great at surfacing potential leads, but humans are still needed to truly qualify intent.
So how do you qualify better without wasting time? The book suggests the 5-question script, 5QS, for that initial human touch, right?
Yes, it's a lightweight discovery framework. What prompted your search? What's the problem costing you? What have you tried? Who else needs to weigh in? Is there a deadline? Simple, direct questions.
And it pairs this with an upgrade to BANT.
Yeah, BANT 2.0. Moving beyond just budget, authority, need, timing. It focuses on business impact, access to consensus, not just one authority figure, negative consequences of inaction, and trigger clock, what's driving urgency.
Business impact, access to consensus, negative consequences, trigger clock.
Oh, and here's the clever part. Agents can often pre-fill a lot of this BANT 2.0 info before a human even talks to the prospect, pulling data from public sources, company reports, etc.
Ah, so the agent does the prep work, letting the human focus on the higher level strategic conversation and qualification.
Precisely. Augmentation, not just automation.
That makes sense. What about leads that go cold or prospects who aren't ready yet?
That's where nurture loops that never forget come in. Monica Alvarez's story is amazing here. Head of revenue, had a big mining company ghost her after a perfect demo. Happens all the time, right?
All the time. Very frustrating.
4 months pass. Suddenly, a sensor failure shuts down their mine. They urgently need her solution.
Okay, perfect timing. But how do they remember her after 4 months of silence?
One single, well-timed nurture email. It was a short case study about preventing equipment downtime. An autonomous cadence engine running in the background detected some signal of fresh intent, maybe website visits, content downloads, and surfaced that specific email at just the right moment.
Wow. Before any human even noticed.
Exactly. She closed a $1.8 million deal 19 days later.
That is powerful. It shows the value of staying top of mind with relevant content consistently.
That's the promise of these nurture loops. They're like self-adjusting circuits. They deliver value, educate, entertain, equip until the prospect's intent spikes. Then, boom, they escalate it instantly.
And it follows that 3-gives-1-ask ratio.
Yeah, that's the golden ratio I mentioned. 3 touches offering value before you ask for their time or money. So when you do ask, it feels earned. like the natural next step, not some pushy sales pitch out of the blue. Builds trust.
Okay, so it's clear this isn't just about setting up bots and walking away. There's strategy, personalization, qualification, nurturing. But it also seems like there's still a really critical role for humans, maybe even more critical in some ways.
Yeah.
What does that human role look like?
Absolutely. The book is very clear on this. It champions the lean scaling method. Manual first, then automate. Don't automate what you don't understand deeply yourself. There's this anecdote about Monroe Lee, a co-founder. Spent 3 hours on a flight crafting one email. Just 6 sentences. Super direct. Maybe even a bit embarrassing, he thought.
Okay. What happened?
It resonated perfectly with a general counsel he sent it to. Led to a meeting and eventually his first paying customer. That manual, thoughtful, human effort. That became the DNA for the automated systems they built later. They perfected it by hand first.
I love that. Manual work is the cheapest R&D lab. Figure out what actually worked through human effort before trying to scale it with tech.
Exactly. It avoids scaling mistakes.
So how do you decide what to automate? The book has a rule for that, right? The 3x80% rule.
Yes. It's a practical guideline. Only automate a task if two conditions are met. First, you perform that same micro workflow at least 3 times a week. It needs to be frequent enough to warrant automation.
Okay, frequency matters.
Second, the steps and the language involved stay identical or can be adapted using variables at least 80% of the time.
80%? That seems key. What are the traps there? How do you know if it's really 80% adaptable, not just wishful thinking?
That is a fantastic question, and it's where people often mess up. They overestimate the 80%. They think, oh yeah, most of this email is the same. But they forget the crucial 20% that requires real nuance.
Like referencing a specific competitor mention or a recent news article about their company?
Exactly. Or a unique pain point they mentioned in a previous call. If the agent can't handle that 20% in a way that feels genuinely personalized and relevant, the whole thing falls flat. It might even sound tone deaf or generic, despite the 80% being correct.
Right. The uncanny valley of automation.
Sort of.
Yeah.
So the manual DNA you use to train or configure the agent has to truly capture all the essential variability you need, not just the common stuff. If the task happens weekly but looks significantly different each time, keep it human. The agent should handle the truly repetitive parts brilliantly.
That's a really important nuance.
Okay.
Because it's been super insightful. Looking ahead now, beyond these current practices, what's next? What are the really exciting, maybe even slightly scary trends coming down the pike based on these agentic ideas?
Yeah, the book paints a pretty vivid picture of the near future. Get ready for voice AI SDRs. We're not just talking chatbots typing responses. We're talking AI agents having nuanced voice conversations.
Handling actual sales calls.
Potentially, yes.
Yeah.
Imagine an empty call center floor in, say, 2028. Voice AI agents handling the bulk of outbound and even inbound qualification calls, pausing politely, understanding objections, maybe even clarifying them, and only escalating to a human manager when things get really complex, or maybe they detect subtle emotional cues like anxiety in the prospect's voice.
Wow, okay, that's a big leap. What else?
Sentiment routing. Your inbox automatically routes incoming emails based on the emotion detected in the text. Grateful prospects go to customer success, maybe? Angry ones to a specialist escalation team. Jaded skeptics to your best challenger rep, all before a human even reads the email.
Reaching based on inferred emotion. Interesting. And potentially fraught.
Potentially, yes. Ethics and accuracy are huge considerations there. And further out, think about autonomous contract bots. AI that could handle parts of legal negotiation. Referencing your company's past redline history. Maybe suggesting fallback positions. Even dynamically adjusting pricing within pre-approved guardrails.
Okay, that does sound like sci-fi becoming reality pretty fast. Which inevitably brings us back to the people. If machines are doing all this, what's left for humans? What's our role?
It's a fundamental question. The book suggests the rise of agentops teams, people whose job it is to manage these agents, like curating the prompts, monitoring performance, watching for drift where the agent's behavior changes unexpectedly and crucially, enforcing ethical guidelines.
So managing the machines becomes a key human role.
Yes, and the book really pushes this idea. Treat AI as a co-founder. You have to onboard it, train it, give it the right context and goals, share incentives maybe. And always remember, AI magnifies your intent. It doesn't set your vision or your values. That's still profoundly human.
So the vision, the strategy, the ethics, that remains human territory.
Absolutely. The best companies, the argument goes, will let the machines handle the drudgery, the repetitive tasks, so that humans are freed up to do what only humans can truly do. relate empathically, think creatively, build relationships, inspire teams, set the ethical compass.
That's a compelling vision. Okay, we've covered a ton of ground today, from defining agentic sales and the forces driving it to the absolute must-haves of PMF and ICP before you automate anything.
Uh-huh.
We talked about AI-powered hyper-personalization, faster lead qualification, those amazing nurture loops that never forget, and the wisdom of starting manual your cheapest R&D, plus a glimpse into the future with voice AI and new roles like agent tops.
It's a lot to take in, for sure.
Definitely. The book wraps up with a really provocative thought framed as an action plan for your first 30 days. It's like a weekly sprint.
Sure.
Week one, focus on clarity PMF, ICP. Week two, prototype, build that manual process, find the DNA. Week three, automate just the smallest viable loop, start small. Week four, build the future floor, iterate and expand based on what you learn.
Yeah, start small, learn fast.
And that core reminder echoes throughout. Only automate what you have truly mastered doing by hand first. It seems this deep dive really shows that the future isn't about replacing humans necessarily, but about augmenting them. It belongs to teams who treat AI like that co-founder, who see technology as a tailwind, helping them go faster and further, not just a treadmill making them run harder.
Well said. It's about working smarter, leveraging these tools effectively.
So as we wrap up, the question for you listening is, what stands out to you from today's deep dive? How might you start applying some of these insights, even small ones, to sell smarter, not just harder? How can you let the Silicon minions do some of the hustling, freeing you up to build those crucial relationships and focus on the bigger picture, the vision? Something to think about.
Thank you for listening. I hope you had a good one and got inspired. I am your host, Tim Kortinovis. Hear you in the next one.